This is the Entrepreneurship Laboratory at the Next Conference here in Berlin. We are lucky to have Tim Ferriss with us. Thanks a lot.
Oh, my pleasure. Lucky to be here.
Wonderful. Thanks. Mm-hmm. You have written a world bestseller, The 4 Hours Week, mm-hmm. Work Week, 4 Hours Work Week. Mm-hmm. We are in entrepreneurship. You probably are in entrepreneurship as well. Mm-hmm. What is your recommendation? How to get to a 4 Hours Work Week? What we do is we promote components. Mm-hmm. Don't do everything yourself. Start with components and limit yourself to the most important things, mm-hmm. maybe the concept. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on that?
I think the concept is the same, actually. So the starting point for much of this depends on where you are in the maturity of an entrepreneur. So if you're a first-time entrepreneur, you need to try a lot of things before you know what you're good at, number one, and also what yields the best results. And I think for the second portion of that, yielding the best results, the 80-20 analysis, which can be applied to identifying, let's say, the 20% of customers who produce 80% or more of your profit, or the 20% of products or services that produce 80% of your revenue, whatever your metrics are, is very, very important. Once you know what you're good at, and then what you enjoy and the overlap, so that's what you can focus on, and then being able to, like you said, break it into components and then either eliminate, which is a good option, or delegating those components outside of that small sliver that you focus on. And I think it's extremely important from the very beginning to focus on, as an owner, if you're the CEO, for example, working on your business as opposed to in your business.
Exactly.
So really thinking about the structure. And even if, to use a very simple example, you have a bakery, you have one bakery, if you want to have a very smooth operation, I think it's helpful to try to develop process and processes as if you were going to have 100 bakeries. You don't have to be big to be good. I think you can be very small and be very good. But thinking about process and thinking about components, as you put it, is very important.
Yeah, I understand that most founders, they try to save money. Mm-hmm. And though they ask their friends or some people, I think it's important to have professional people. You have to afford, the concept must finance to employ professional people.
Absolutely. And I think that you can employ people full-time. You can get people as contractors. You can also get people as advisors. I think your options depend on whether you're self-financing. So bootstrapping is what we'd say in the U.S. I've never taken personally any outside money, so I've always started small and built up, you know, dollar by dollar, to in some cases pretty big, you know, 15 countries in distribution, things like that. If you're traveling the more traditional Silicon Valley startup route, so you're going to be raising capital and then probably not profitable for perhaps a period of time, in either case, if you're going to raise money, I think it's very helpful, and also for the longevity and the success of the business, to have advisors. So what a number of my friends who are serial entrepreneurs have done is they will actually get 4 or 5 advisors in the beginning and offer them anywhere from, let's say, a quarter of a point, meaning 0.25% or 1% of a company, somewhere in that range, and then develop, refine the business model with those advisors, and then use their credibility also to get better investors.
Yeah.
But I think that you want to have the best whenever possible, certainly. And I think you should view business relationships, particularly with co-founders, the same way you would view a marriage. I mean, you should take it very seriously because it's a lot easier to get into a relationship than it is to get out of a relationship.
That's an interesting point, because almost everybody likes to work in a team.
Yeah.
And that sounds very good and comfortable.
Yeah.
And you are a little bit skeptical about that. You say a lot of mistakes done by choosing people for social reasons, but not for business reasons.
Right, exactly. So the personal chemistry is important, but what happens very often is you find people build the team around them who won't say no to them. And you have 5 people who think exactly the same, or you have 1 person with a very strong personality, and then 4 people who aren't going to disagree with them. And that doesn't improve anything. And I think that if you have a very refined business model, that's the first step. If you add people to that, then you can multiply the results. If you have a bad process or an unrefined model and you add people, then it just multiplies the problems. So I think it's very critical, whenever possible, to try to scale in size and revenue, et cetera, without scaling in headcount.
Yeah.
And at least to do that thought exercise, so you try to improve the model first and then add people second.
So the improving, creating and improving the business model.
Yeah.
That's the task of the lead entrepreneur before he chooses a team.
Yeah, I think so. And you can bring on advisors, but those the way that I think you should choose advisors is people who, number one, know things that you don't, have experience that you don't, and number three, who are strong-willed enough to disagree with you. And that's extremely important. So there was an anecdote that I read in The Effective Executive. So written by Peter Drucker. Great book. It's a small book. I'm sure it's in German. And there was an anecdote. I don't remember the exact business tycoon, but an icon in business. And he had a meeting. And anytime he had a meeting, he would say at the end, does anyone have anything to add to this, any disagreement, any discussions, questions? And if everyone said no, he'd go, all right, great, we're going to schedule another meeting, and then you can come back with questions.
So he forced them.
He forced them. Exactly. Yeah. And I think just as meetings is one example, in every meeting, a few things. Number one, you can brainstorm as a group, but only one person can make the decision.
Yeah.
Very important. Yeah. Number two is that there should always be someone to play devil's advocate, meaning to just take the opposing view,
yes,
just to argue and discuss it. And then thirdly, at the end of any meeting, you should have very precise next steps that are delegated, assigned to specific people. And if you don't do that, then a meeting is just a waste of time.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about capital. Most people still believe that capital is a bottleneck when you start a company. I don't believe in that. What is your...
I don't really believe that. Number one, if you don't have... There are two sort of philosophical perspectives, I think, that I have. Well, there's one actually just pragmatic position, which is supported by the data, certainly, which is it's never been, at least in a web technology startup, it's never been cheaper to start a company.
Yes.
Never. You can rent architecture on Amazon and so forth and so on. It's never been cheaper. So you can certainly test enough and prototype online for next to no money.
Before you put in a lot of money.
Exactly.
So proof of concept first.
Yeah.
Before you invest.
Which I think is extremely important.
Yeah.
Number two is that if you don't have the resourcefulness, if you can't improvise in the beginning to get started, then you're probably not going to be able to improvise later, and you should just not start your own company, quite frankly, because I think that lack of capital is usually an excuse. There are some exceptions, like biotech company, big, long sales cycle. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
But usually, if you look at Microsoft, you look at Apple, you look at, Facebook would be another example. You look at something outside of tech, like somewhat tech related, Alibaba in China, and Jack Ma.
Yeah.
And he's been quoted very widely as saying, we had a few advantages when we started. We had no money, we had no plan, we had no experience. And so every dollar they spent, every decision they made, they took very seriously. And it resulted in a better company.
Yeah.
So I agree. I don't think that capital is the biggest limiter.
Yeah. You have been in Germany now for a few days and probably speaking to a lot of entrepreneurs, startups. What is the difference in climate, in beliefs of the German startup scene compared with your American experience?
Well, I would say there definitely are some differences that I've observed. But even in the U.S., I live in San Francisco, and it's a very unusual place compared to most of the United States. Even New York, it's totally different because there's such a density of entrepreneurship and venture capital and just believers. It's a core group of believers in entrepreneurship. In Germany and in Europe in general, what I've seen, and it's not always the case, but it's more common, is what you might call, in New Zealand, they call it tall poppy syndrome. So tall poppy, it's a type of flower. And tall poppy syndrome means that if your flower gets too much higher than the other flowers, that people try to cut you down.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's a lot of cynicism and skepticism. I see less support for entrepreneurs.
Yes, certainly too.
Than in the United States, because the United States is a very young country. It's a very recent experiment, and I think that you combine the Protestant work ethic with a capital system and democracy, and you get a very unique recipe for entrepreneurship. I don't think that it's limited to the U.S., not at all. There's some amazing companies in Brazil and in Germany, certainly, and China, everywhere. But it's less widespread. So I'm hoping that that'll change. And I think, but I do think that's a personal perspective where if someone wants to start a company in Silicon Valley and it's a huge idea, people are like, all right, well, you might as well get started. And they'll provide feedback, but they don't say, ah, that's ridiculous. You could never do that. It's very uncommon. And I think you get more of that. I've seen more of that in Germany, just watching people interact.
So, what would you recommend for the German founder in such a situation? Insist on the good business model and go ahead and be more optimistic, or what's your view?
I would say be optimistic and be confident, but that confidence needs to be based on action. And so there are a lot of terrible business models and a lot of terrible business ideas. And the way that you don't waste all of your time and capital on that is you test it really early. I mean, before you make your product, you should be trying to sell it. Absolutely. And if you can't sell your product, then you don't build it.
Don't insist too much on the business plan, but go for the clients first.
Yeah, exactly. And it will help you. It will help you with your product and business design to try to sell the concept first, or to sell the product. And you see people do this very well across the world in different ways, whether it's online. But if you can't just ask people their opinion. So if you do a focus group and you ask people, "Would you buy this?" If they say, "Oh, yeah, I'd absolutely buy it, absolutely buy it," and you can say, "Oh, well, great, we have good news. We're actually giving people a 50% discount if they pre-order today." And then if they go, "Ah, well," then you know they were lying.
Then you know.
Because people will tell you what you want to hear. Yeah. So you have to make people vote, you know, with their money if that's
their
important.
Put down their money in advance for
absolutely.
A real check.
Yeah, and so there are a number of ways to do that. You could use a site like Kickstarter, and there are probably examples. There are other examples of that. Secondly is you need to surround yourself with a good peer group. So if you want to be a tech entrepreneur, you need to really seek out the tech entrepreneurs around you and try to find them. And if they're not in Germany, you know, like save up and buy a plane ticket to, you know, Holland or to London, or you know, spend 2 weeks in a place like that. If you start getting depressed and you really feel badly about the prospects, if it's a reflection of just other people around you and not the actual business concept itself, then perhaps you should take a trip to Silicon Valley for 2 weeks and you just use couchsurfing.org to stay at people's houses and just get to meet people in that world so you don't feel as isolated.
I
think that a lot of businesses fail when people simply feel alone in their challenges and they lose confidence and they stop. Whereas if you're surrounded by people trying to build companies, you see that they all have the same problems.
Yeah. Maybe a last question. Mm-hmm. This capital is a bottleneck. I don't think it's true. If there are good concepts, there's money available. There's mm-hmm. capital available. Mm-hmm. But the lack is good concepts. Would you agree on that?
I would agree with that. And I would also further say that if you want to get capital, you just have to show that you have that customers are responding well. Even if you haven't produced a product yet, customers are responding well to the idea, or people are responding well to the idea, and that there's a large enough market for, let's say, the VC or angel to get a return on their investment. If you're going that path, if you're bootstrapping, then it's a different story altogether. But if you're raising capital, if you can answer those two questions and show that the team can pull it off, that's the first question. I mean, any investor I know. And a lot of these investors are very smart and good entrepreneurs. The first thing they'll do is they'll flip to the team page and look at the team. So you have to also convince them that you're the person for the job.
Yeah.
And as long as you can do that, hey, I think, you know, the world is your oyster, as we would say. I think I think there are going to be many, many billion-dollar companies in the next. I think we'll see more billion-dollar tech companies in the next 10 years than probably in the last 30 or 40. I really believe that. We'll see how the U.S. public markets do. But, you know, barring some type of implosion, I think we're going to see some phenomenal companies. It's a really exciting time to be an entrepreneur.
Thanks a lot, Tim, for that interview.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.